Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello and welcome back to the show. Hey Dad, how you doing?
Hello, Tay, doing good. How about you?
Doing all right. Sweaty, but good. A little heat wave up here in New York.
Well, that's a little sweat does you good sometimes, you know. Gets all the toxins out of you, you know.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's a good excuse to have a nice cold beverage, I guess.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm having a little vino verde, which is a white wine. You might think it's green, but it's white. It's not bubbly. It's like a little fizzy. It's like slightly bubbly.
Slightly bubbly, tiny nice. Bubbles in the wine.
It's a little bit. Do you have anything good to drink this week?
I have not had anything good to drink this week. I should be drinking massive quantities at this point. This has been the busiest weekend that I have had in a long time. It started Friday. Riley and I got on the road at 6 in the morning and drove to D.C. in an old beat-up cargo van to deliver all her furniture that she moved out of her apartment here into her apartment up there, and then we drove back in the same day.
Oof.
So we got back a little bit before midnight, and it was
Friday, right?
Yeah, it was Friday, so that was a long, exhausting day going in and out of D.C. in one day. And then Saturday, I wake up, and Sydney called and told us their pool guy had canceled opening their pool, and would Pop please come up and open the pool for his granddaughters. So I had to go up and help them open their pool in 90-degree weather. I was all sweating. And then that night, the granddaughters had their recital, so we struggled into that to watch their recital, dance recital. And then today, I had to make a round trip to Corbin, Kentucky, 3 hours each way, to pick up a 7-foot prop cow for a show that we're doing this summer.
6 hours for a cow.
Yeah, 6 hours for a cow. And so I meet some guy from Tennessee that I've never seen before, and he drove half 3 hours from where he lives, and I drove 3 hours from where I live. We met in the middle of nowhere and traded off that cow for more than magic beans, which is what he gets traded for in the show.
I think I know how the story goes. It's a dangerous trade.
Yeah. And so I could bring that cow back home. And that's how I spent my weekend, on the road and opening up pools. And I'm worn out. I'm an old man. I need to go to bed for a week now.
You deserve a nap, and you absolutely deserve a nice drink after that.
Yeah, and the only tie-in I can say to all that story is that the cow's name is Milky White, and that's what they say the topic of today becomes when you put a few drops of water in it before you drink it.
Okay, we'll go with that transition. That's smooth. yes, as Dad is alluding to, this week I wanted to talk about, this is going to be kind of two episodes out of one Patreon question, so thank you to the patron that asked. Wrote in asking about ouzo, and if it is all related to Lebanon. They had a grandfather that made ouzo a lot and was kind of trying to figure out the history of that. And there is a similar spirit that is associated with Lebanon, so we'll talk about a bit more spirits from that region next week. But I do want to start with talking about ouzo. I think that's going to be our starting place for this discussion. We'll see how many episodes we can spin out of it. But I didn't. All I really knew of it going in was that it is Greek, and that it's anise flavored, and that's the beginning and end of my knowledge. But before this episode,
well, that's what the only time that I'd heard of it is. I know that there was I don't know if you remember, there was that one real nice Greek restaurant we used to go to down on the waterfront in Savannah when we would go there. Your Uncle Danny had some kind of friend that worked there or was part of the owner of it or something like that. And that was one of the places that we would eat down there. And they always had ouzo on the menu. And to me, it was kind of like when you go to like a restaurant with Asian food that has sake, that you kind of have that with your meal. You have ouzo with your meal when you have eaten at a Greek restaurant. So that's kind of what I likened it to, was ouzo was the Greek version of sake, but that's not at all correct.
Well, I mean, in flavor, no. But I think in custom, somewhat, a little bit. Mm-hmm. It is usually consumed with food, but we'll get into that. Did you have it when you were there?
Yeah. Yeah? Yeah. It was pretty good. I mean, I wouldn't sit there and drink it all night, but yeah, it was an interesting drink to drink. I guess you did like a shot of it before dinner or something like that.
Oh, no, that's inappropriate. You're not supposed to shoot it.
Well, no, I don't mean it was about a shot size is what I mean. I'm not saying I threw it back.
Yeah, you want to sip and savor ouzo. You don't shoot it.
That's right.
But it is served in small shot-like glasses. All right. So to anybody unfamiliar with any of the spirits that we mentioned, let's just start with the basics. What is ouzo? In short, ouzo is an anise flavored liquor. It clocks in alcohol wise, similar to that of other base spirits. So like in the 40% or 80 proof range. So a lot of people tend to think of it as being really strong. It's not particularly strong. It's not that dissimilar from just a regular vodka or whiskey, whatever. It does have a reputation for pretty bad hangovers, and that has a lot more to do with the sugar levels in it. Sugar can be added to it, and that we know from the science of sugar and alcohol, that can lead to a much worse hangover than just a higher alcohol content will.
Mm-hmm.
But it's clear, it's very smooth, and it has a very strong anise flavor, similar to absinthe.
Yeah, I said it's absinthe without the wormwood.
Yes. It's one of its selling points. Now, historically, where it comes from, it's thought to be sort of an evolution of something called a tsiporo, which is a Greek unaged brandy that dates back to the 14th century monks in Macedonia. And this sort of comes from the same line of like Italian grappa. So we're talking about, you know, a spirit distilled from grape stems, must, sort of a byproduct of winemaking. You know, you smoosh your grapes, you take the juice to make your wine, and then you use that leftover. You let it ferment a little bit, and then you distill that leftover residue, and from that, you get a booze. You get a distillate.
A grappa.
Yeah. Well, you know, the grappa, in this case, it's this Tsiporo. Traditionally, it was flavored. It could be flavored or just left as is. When it was flavored, it was usually flavored with anise. It's worth mentioning, if you don't take the must out of the wine, if you don't take the juice and distill just the whole pulp and everything, you get this sort of upgrade of the Tsiporo called apostagma, which is much more expensive. If you're curious about any of that, these aren't like ancient lost spirits that we're discussing. These are both still made. You can find all of this. But this one type of the Tsiporo, this anise flavored one, is what sort of spun out and took on its own identity as ouzo. Now, the Tsiporo can be served hot or cold. It's usually in a small glass. It's usually reserved for social gatherings, served with food. So a lot of similarities with what we'll get into when we talk about how you consume ouzo. But
it's not really something that you want to mix. Once again, this is another one of those ones of kind of tradition where you drink it straight up. You don't really mix it.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you count water.
Yeah. No. It is a bit more of a ouzo specifically is a bit more of a recent history than we're used to. You know, a lot of times we're talking about mm-hmm. these spirits that go. We mentioned 14th century monks for the original spirit. But the identity of ouzo is its own thing and not just a type of Tsiporo. And it's their own unique sort of distillation method. Comes about fairly recently in the grand scheme of things. Like 1856 is when the first commercial distillery is opened. And that is around the time that the name itself came into popular usage.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty interesting that that's all the longer that it's been around to, you know. That's over 100 years, but it's not really, in the overall scheme of things, that long of a time when some of the drinks we talk about came from Mesopotamia or whatever, you know?
Well, and, like, the lineage, like, as far as, you know, grape distillate anise flavored alcohol. This has been around for hundreds of years at this point. You have a lot of areas in the region that have something similar. But the identity of ouzo as its own product, yes, this is when it starts. And the name is a bit of a mystery. There are a couple possible points of origin. One is that it came from the ancient Greek word ouzo, or smell, sort of just as a way to refer to it, so to separate it from the unflavored Cipro. It's like, oh, it has the strong smell from that anise. Another possible origin point is a Turkish word, uzum, which means grape. But perhaps the most interesting, it's kind of a funny story, that around the same time that, you know, we have these, the first distillery open, you have silkworm cocoons were being exported from Thessaly to Marseille. And the ones that were considered to be the best quality were the ones that were sent to Marseille. So they were stamped with the words Use Marsiglia, which was Italian, but it meant to be used in Marseille. And this phrase sort of became a shorthand for just very good stuff. It was meant for Marseille. So
it's a quality product.
Yeah. Just got shortened to ouzo, and that just specifically anytime you tried something and it was really good quality, it was just a colloquialism like, oh, that's ouzo, that's really good stuff. And at some point, the anise-flavored version of Cipro just became known as ouzo. So I like that story the most. I don't know which one's true, but that one's cute.
Well, I think that one makes the most sense.
Yeah.
Because that was being shipped from there. That's also one of my favorite Jimmy Buffett songs, Coast of Marseille.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I love Marseille. I was a little overwhelmed. I only spent a little time in France. I was overwhelmed by Paris, but I really liked Marseille because Marseille is really laid back. I think you'd like it. They have really good pizza and rosé and pastis, and that's kind of – and really cool graffiti. I don't know. It's a cool place.
Hmm. Well, I like pizza.
Yeah, I realize the other things I mentioned not so much, but the pizza, though, really good.
that's when I caught my attention.
But that first distillery in Greece that was opened by a man named Nicholas Katsaros, and it was capitalizing, as you alluded to, that ouzo is sort of absinthe without the wormwood. Well, around the turn of the century, that's when absinthe was starting to get a bad name. A bad reputation for its the dangerous effects of wormwood, the psychedelic properties. So ouzo sort of capitalized on that. Like, oh, we're all the flavor, none of the paranoid episodes.
Yeah, Edgar Allan Poe doesn't drink this.
Well, hey, as we learned, Edgar Allan Poe did not also drink absinthe. But yes, it was in this sort of, you know, panic moment about absinthe, ouzo kind of found its niche.
Yeah.
Now, the process is a little different from that original spirit, that Cipro, and this is sort of when it takes on its own identity. The big difference, really, is that I mentioned in making Cipro, you distill it to about a standard proof. So you take that grape must, you know, just like anything else, you distill it, you might dilute it a little bit, but you're starting with a product that's 35 to 45% alcohol. This is similar to how we make a lot of spirits. With ouzo, you start out much hotter. So you start with something called rectified spirit. If you've ever encountered, have you ever seen rectified spirit in liquor stores, Dad?
I don't think so.
I bought it thinking that it was similar to Everclear, and it is not. I mean, Everclear.
That's what I would have guessed.
It is similar in that it's meant like for use, not for consumption, really. Like, you know, it's high octane. But I mean,
yeah,
it's really just you take something and you distill it to the point of like almost being pure alcohol. It's super hot. It's great for making like tinctures, disinfecting your cabinets. My liquor store, my liquor store sells it. And it's kind of a different places you're not even allowed to sell it because it's such high alcohol. But
Molotov during, cocktails.
Yeah, absolutely. but during like the height of the pandemic, when you couldn't find hand sanitizer, they were buying cases of rectified spirit at my local liquor store and advertising to have it because people were making use of it to disinfect themselves. So it's really, really strong stuff. Great if you want to make bitters or something. Don't ever take a shot of it. It's not meant for that, you know. But that's the base for Uzo. That's what you start with. So you're starting with something really clean. You know, and it doesn't have to be distilled from grapes. It traditionally is, but it can be distilled from grains. The point is to just get this very clean, high-octane starting point. And then that is traditionally in a copper pot still. Then it would be distilled with anise, sometimes other spices, but always anise. And then it's added. This is sort of creates this like high flavor, high alcohol solution that they call the Uzo yeast. So don't get, this can be confusing because we use yeast in distillation. There's not yeast here. It's just think of it as a metaphor as like the thing that makes Uzo, what we call Uzo yeast. You've got your flavor stuff and your booze. And that is then like distilled out, like the heads and tails are put back for later use. The heart is the part that we save. That gets proofed down to like a drinkable proof with water. Sugar can be added before the solution. Sometimes they'll cut it with like cheaper spirits as well. It's not super tightly regulated, but it does have to be at least 20% of that pure Uzo yeast, and it has to be at least 37.5% alcohol when it goes in the bottle, and usually goes up to about 50%. So like I said, it doesn't end up really hot. It doesn't end up paint thinner. It just does start off that way.
It will take the paint off the wall to where it starts at.
Yes, yes. So, and that does bring in the flavor differences between that original, that Cipro, and then Uzo, because you get a lot more of the original grape must sort of retained in the Sporo, whereas the Uzo has all that cleared out. You really do just get the pure flavor of the added flavoring, the anise and any other spices that you add on top of that. So, in neither cases are either of these aged. Sometimes Cipro can be aged, but not generally. It's almost always a clear spirit in both cases.
So it would be no benefit to age it.
I mean, it's just not the popular style. You could. Nowadays, they're rested in steel barrels, but it's just not popular aged Uzo.
And then the Greek government was very smart to move in and determine what you could only make Uzo in Greece. And nothing else can actually be called Uzo. They saw what was happening with bourbon, and they said, we're getting in on that.
Yeah, that happened in 2006. The EU granted the Greek government exclusive rights to produce Uzo, Greece and Cyprus. And they, that's it. Anything outside of that? And as we'll get into a bit more next week, a lot of places around there make something that would be pretty hard to distinguish from Uzo, but they're just called different things. So it's a very popular style of drink in the area, all around the Mediterranean. But yes, if you have Uzo on your label, it's got to be that 37.5% alcohol. It's got to be that 20% pure Uzo yeast, and it's got to be made in Greece and Cyprus.
Which the pure Uzo yeast has nothing to do with yeast.
Yes, that is confusing. which is because, I mean, there is like natural yeast probably on the grapes, so there is, anyway, don't you know.
Don't think about it. It's just a metaphor, just a name.
Just the soup that you make into the Uzo. The primordial Uzo soup. I'm not making it easier to understand.
Primordial Uzo.
Right. Oh, there we go.
That's where the name came from.
Yes, that's it. Now, that original distillery that I met, that we talked about that opened in the 1800s, still open, still in production. The island of Lesvos is perhaps most strongly associated with the production of Uzo. It produces half of the Uzo made, and it has 17 distilleries all on that island. So there's a lot of Uzo made in Greece. It is the national spirit of Greece, but interesting thing, not the thing that the Greeks drink the most.
It's probably wine, isn't it?
Whiskey is the most popular spirit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Uzo is second in that, and then followed by vodka. But they do make a lot of it. It's about 50% of their distilling market is from Uzo distillation. For other spirits, I mean, this is one of those things where, which, you know, sort of the next topic to discuss is discuss is how do you drink it? And it's not necessarily like the thing that you drink with your dinner. It's sort of in its own cultural ritual.
It's sort of like where you eat some appetizers with it.
Yeah. You have, you know, you aren't, there's some do's and don'ts. I mean, first and foremost, for our purposes here on the BoozeCast, you don't traditionally put it in cocktails.
Nope. They like it straight.
Yeah. People do put it in cocktails. You usually sub it in places that you use other anise or, you know, fennel, whatever kind of aquavies or absinthe, you can sub it in there. But if you want to be respectful to the spirit, you don't mix it. It's consumed straight, small glasses, don't shoot it. It's meant to be savored. And it's kind of a whole, like, you know, you go to these, like, oozeries. Like,
oozeries?
Oozeries. Like, little ouzo cafe, a little ouzo specific themed little eatery that's just like, we've got ouzo and we've got these snacks, you know, and you're talking like traditional kind of Greek small plates, you know, you got some grapes, you've got some fish, you've got some eggplant, you've got just, you know, your standard fare, and you have your little, you take your little sips of ouzo, you have your little small plates, and you just relax and enjoy like the late afternoon sun for a couple hours. It sounds lovely.
Stuffed mushrooms, jalapeno poppers.
Well, all right. That's okay. Yes, it's the Applebee's version of an oozery.
And the cheese would be feta that they would use, I guess.
There would be cheese, yes.
Yeah.
But going back to the little intro you gave us, a little opening. Now I've said several times that it's clear. It starts off clear, but it does shift to white when you put any dilution in it, really. And that is from something called the ouzo effect. I know we've talked about this on previous episodes. Maybe we talked about absinthe. I think we talked about this.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And it's basically, it's just that one of the essential oils present in anise is this thing called anethyl. And it is soluble in alcohol above around 38%. So once you add water once it starts to proof down, it sort of seizes up and gives you this cloudy effect that makes it look milky.
Milky white.
Yep. That's, and you know, yeah, you see the same thing in absinthe when you do the sugar drip into it. Now, I couldn't get a clear answer here as to whether or not it was appropriate to add ice cubes or just ice water. Some people said no, just ice water, not ice cubes. Some people said both are fine. But across the board, it seemed pretty clear that you do not refrigerate it. Even though you want to drink it cold, you don't refrigerate it. You always have some sort of liquid as your cooling agent, which makes sense because I think the dilution is part of it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess you're supposed to cut it some. It's a little rough if you just drink it straight out of the bottle, huh?
Yeah. That, and never on an empty stomach. The food is important.
Eat all the food. Keep something on your belly. You don't want to have that ouzo come back and visit you later.
No. Well, and that's, you know, the sugar, because of how it's digested, the sugar content in the ouzo, it makes you think you're less drunk than you are, so you tend to drink more of it because it just impedes the processing of the alcohol. So you get the sugars, but you also get this sort of halo effect of like, oh, I'm fine. Oh no, I'm not fine. It's not any more dangerous than any spirit. Like a lot of things we talk about, that get these sort of, you know, air of mystery of like, oh, it's so strong. Oh, it's gonna mess you up. It's, you know, not any different than drinking a lot of things. There's sugar, there's alcohol in pretty normal proportions. You just want to be aware that they're both generally there.
Well, I think in pretty much all of those traditional drinks that we've talked about associated with different nations, usually when they talk about drinking it straight, they talk about the foods that you should eat along with them. So it's all the same type practice.
Yeah, I do think that's interesting. Like, I mean, drinking on its own is not a universal thing, just, you know, holding up to a bar and drinking. I think, I mean, obviously we do that here in America, but more countries than not, I'd say, and please somebody correct me if they think I'm wrong, have a culture, their drinking culture is very closely tied to food.
Mm-hmm.
So almost always you eat when you drink. I mean, I know a lot of the Asian cultures we've talked about, that's the case. A lot of the European cultures we've talked about, you know, like it just seems to always be a vital part of it.
Yeah. And it's like certain types of things that are, you know, that go, it's always something different. And it's a lot of it. It's their native food that they eat, you know.
And that's what there was an article on the Greek tourist site that was talking about, or tourism site that was talking about ouzo, and it's like you don't for main courses, for meals, you wouldn't sip ouzo. It's kind of specifically right. Like we're celebrating, we're hanging out, we're having this relaxing small plate kind of thing. For meals, you would have wine or you would have beer, you know, that's more normal.
Right.
But it's reserved, yeah, like you were saying, for this very specific sort of ceremony.
Yeah, the ouzo that we got, like, at that Greek restaurant I was talking about, they brought that to us when we ordered it, you know, with the appetizers prior to the meal, and nobody ordered it for their drink to be for dinner. You got it as something to experience prior to the dinner.
Yeah. Well, that's a little rundown on ouzo. As I said, it's not normally mixed in cocktails. That doesn't mean you can't. I can't think of ever seeing it on a menu.
Just straight is the only way I've ever seen it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you could mix it just the same as you mix with anything, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, if it's absinthe without the wormwood, you could use it in any recipe that calls for absinthe.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was looking to see how a couple, you know, popular, like, I don't know, different bartending sites, Spruce Eats, stuff like that, how they recommend mixing with it. And a lot of times it is just anytime you have a vaguely anise flavored liqueur or liquor, you could sub this in. So there definitely isn't like a go-to drink if you do want to mix it. But that is, that's kind of fun though. If you get a bottle of it, you know, try it straight, see what you can mix up with it, sub it into your favorite absinthe cocktail.
Well, I think it's pretty cool too. Just pour a small glass of it and then cut it like 50-50 with ice water, you know, and drink it that way. That cools it down. Don't refrigerate it. Just cut it with ice water.
That sounds good for a day like today.
Yeah, it sounds good for like a weekend after I've just had all the driving. See, I couldn't do any drinking this weekend because I was driving too much. Those two don't mix.
Well, you're home. You've got your cow secured.
Yeah.
So...
that was utter nonsense.
Ha, ha, ha.
I had to move on down the road.
I was just about to make the same joke.
You've been around me too long.
So we got to move on from this topic. All right. So there's a little taste of ouzo for you. We'll talk more anise-flavored beverages around the Mediterranean next week. And hopefully fully answer our patron's question. Do you have any other final thoughts about ouzo, Dad?
No, I guess so. If we did our podcast about it every week, we might be called Neat the Ooze Cast.
Well, you know, that might be difficult to pull off for multiple weeks. I don't know if it's an evergreen topic exactly.
Yeah. Well, today we're going to talk about ouzo again. You put water in it, drink it. Well, okay.
On ouzo, and then talk about other things. And then it's an ouzo. It's through the filter of ouzo.
Oh, now that might be an interesting topic.
That's a concept.
Yeah. That sounds like a special video for us to do.
Yeah. That's subscriber only. That's just for the
two ouzo drunks.
But hey, if you have questions and you'd like them answered, I mean, you can just like email us at neattheboozecast@gmail.com and we will answer your questions, but we give priority to people on our Patreon. So if you want to support us, if you want, to have access to extra videos, content, prizes, stickers, all sorts of fun stuff, you should check us out over on Patreon, and we are deeply, deeply appreciative to everybody over there. Thank you all so much. If you want to find us on social media, we are Neat Boozecast on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to, if you have some cool stories about, I don't know, things you've had in Greece, or anise flavored beverages or ouzo, you can talk about those with people
at Neat the Booze Cast Facebook group page.
That's where you go. Do that there. Go there to do that. And of course, thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Tay, for having me. I always learn something.
Good luck with your cow.
Thank you. My cow is feeling better now that we've got his legs back on.
Okay. Yeah. It's a long ride to make with no legs.
Yeah, we had to de-leg him to get him in the car, so now he's legged again.
Just drove 3 hours to meet a guy about a cow. That's great.
Yeah, I know.
The start to like a creepypasta or something.
It was like a kidnapping, a hostage type thing. I told mom was ready to Venmo him the money, and I said, wait till I get there and see the cow. I got to make sure he's got the cow. Okay, it's a go. I got the cow. Send the money.
Got the cow. I got the money.
That's right. Let me see the cow first before I give you the money.
I need a picture of the cow holding up today's newspaper right now.
Did they hurt you in any way, cow? Yeah, they took my legs off.
Thank you all for joining us here. We'll be back again next week. As always, I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been
me. The Ouzo cast.
Yeah, all different shows in one.
Yeah.